What's up, Apes? Hope everybody is having a phenomenal week so far. I know we are over here at the Daily PO Global Headquarters because once again, the WSO Alpha portfolio had a positive day. We'll talk about that more in-depthly in just a quick second, but stay tuned to learn much more about a rare investment opportunity in a closed-end fund. I know that sounds incredibly boomer, but stay tuned because you might learn how you can invest in companies like SpaceX, Epic Games, and other private tech companies that are typically reserved to billionaires and actual important people, unlike you and me. We're also going to be diving into some big stock movers of the day and, of course, going through a little bit of an update on the AI landscape. So stay tuned for all of our thoughts on that. For now, just know that the WSO Alpha portfolio was up about 14 basis points on the day. That's an exact tie with the S&P 500 up 14 bips as well. They're just trying to copy a lot of our moves. I don't really blame them, given that how easy it is to outperform the S&P 500. Obviously, can do it in our sleep. Now, the NASDAQ did get a little bit lucky on the day here. They rose about 32 basis points. So, you know, shout out to them. Everybody deserves a win once in a while here, but they got lucky. I mean, we all know that it's not going to last here. There was a strong uptick towards the end of the day after some inflation fears chilled out a little bit because we do have the CPI report that's going to be dropping later on today. So stay tuned for tomorrow's peel and tomorrow's video stream and all the other nonsense we'll be talking about related to inflation, macro, and all the other stuff we love to yap about. All right. Moving on, let's get into some of the banana bits, some of the more minor stories that we don't really care all that much about here today. First and foremost, of course, wanted to link to CNBC's breakdown of what to expect in the CPI report. For those of you wise apes who actually wake up before the market opens, I couldn't imagine doing so when I was in college, so I certainly don't blame you at all. But still, definitely check that out if you get the opportunity. Now, tech and Mormonism. These are two things that are generally kind of considered on polar opposite spectrums, but if you go to Utah, you'll find a good combination of both of them, building out a huge tech hub in the state. They say they're going to rival Silicon Valley. I think that's an absolute joke, but definitely go ahead and check that out. Now, of course, certain things are good for me and not for thee, and one of those things is wage growth. So when my earnings go up, that's phenomenal for me, but it sucks for me when everybody else's earnings go up too, because that means one thing, and that is inflation. So, you know, while rising wages is obviously something that everybody wants, you should definitely not want anybody else to also get rising wages, because that's how we screw up in a beautiful economy, quite honestly, like ours. So make sure that you get rich, but also make sure at the same time that your friends, your family, pretty much everybody else stays poor. Now, finally, things just keep getting worse and worse for Boeing. It's honestly embarrassing at this point. This is an American industrial giant. This is something that, you know, the U.S. economy was built upon, was plane sales and other scumbaggery that's engaged in at Boeing, but yet another whistleblower report came out saying that they actively are attempting to kill passengers. Now, that might be a little bit of an over-exaggeration, but, you know, if you actually go in and read this report, might not be as hyperbolic as we might typically expect, or at least that we might hope for. Anyway, let's go ahead and get into the macro monkey, the big story of the day here, and that is, of course, an AI update. Do apologize for the horrendous pun in the title of this section here in the Peel's edition for the day, but nonetheless, there's a lot to talk about going on here. Some things are artificial, some things are intelligent, some things like me are absolutely neither one of them, but we still don't really have what a lot of people would consider to be artificial intelligence, at least in the classical idea of it. The typical kind of sci-fi idea that was kickstarted back in the, at least in the 1960s, and maybe even before that, is an idea of a robot that's able to kind of think on itself. What these people are talking about is artificial general intelligence. We still are far from that, but we do have something that seems like artificial intelligence in the terms of these, in the form of these large language models and other stuff that everybody's been freaking out about over the past couple of years. Now, of course, to power that stuff, there's been a big push for hardware investments in the artificial intelligence space, specifically with semiconductors. So we're going to start off talking about hardware, because back in 2022, the Biden administration passed the Chips and Science of America's, or For America Act, something like that. But it's basically one of those cringy acronym bills in Congress that they do it so that it sounds like what it is. I mean, I think their time would be much better spent than coming up with punny ways to introduce a bill, but still, nonetheless, the Chips and Science Act. This is directing nearly $280 billion to chip infrastructure, artificial intelligence research, a whole bunch of other technology that's way above my pay grade to understand over the next decade or so. So there's going to be about $280 billion in grants and tax credits and other form of deficit increases that the U.S. government is going to be handing out in order to actually power that buildup. And we actually got some news this week, actually earlier today, that there's been a big development in the Chips and Science Act. So basically, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Co., this is TSMC, you might have heard of them because they controlled about 60% of the foundry market globally. They are getting a fat $6.6 billion offer from the United States to continue to build out their chip infrastructure in the country. Now, they're already making a $65 billion investment in building up foundries in the Phoenix, Arizona area. In doing so, about $50 million is allocated to upskilling all of the local workers to figure out what the fuck is going on in AI. They actually be able to build some of those chips and do some research and whatever other nonsense goes on that powers ChatGPT. They're also creating about 25,000 jobs in the process. So, very good thing. And it's very helpful with the United States' goal to develop about 20% of the world's chip market by the year 2030. Obviously, in order to do so, having the largest chip maker in the world is going to be a big help. We already tossed out $8.5 billion to a domestic player in Intel and $1.5 billion to another domestic player in Global Foundries. Now, of course, the dollar's getting passed out to companies from Taiwan. And of course, TSMC, one of the biggest ones in the world. There's actually a pretty cool chart in the piece, if you go check that out, that shows basically a map of the globe of the very flat Earth, because we all know it's flat. And it shows basically which countries are producing the most semiconductors. Now, I was very surprised to see that Germany and England are very high up on this list, but it kind of makes sense because, as far as I know, ARM is, of course, based out of the UK. So they're a chip designer, but that's still a big impact on the market. Now, Germany and the Netherlands have ASML, which I completely forget what that actually stands for, but it's a huge kind of chip foundry making company. Obviously, Taiwan is big on there too. The US right now is the fourth largest player in terms of global chip exports. Basically, at 20% of the world supply, that would bump us up to second place. So that's the goal of the Biden administration at this point. Now, moving on to some of the more fun stuff, and that is, of course, on the software side of things, because this is where we can really speculate wildly. Like Mark Andreessen said all those years ago, software is eating the world, and now it's eating your lunch, too, because it's probably going to come and take your job. But either way, let's go ahead and talk about some of the big developments here. So, of course, Google's Gemini. When this thing was first released, it had a really tough time identifying the race of people like George Washington or like a certain leader of Germany in the early 20th century. Other individuals like that, very basic mistakes. But they came out with some updates and it looks like Gemini is looking a lot better. Now, most notably among that is going to be their token context length limit. Now, that is a sentence that I'm impressed with myself that I even remembered to say here without looking at my screen. But they've radically increased the token context length limit for the Gemini 1.5 model. Gemini 1.5 is basically a new kind of addition. It's not a full new model because then it would be Gemini 2, I guess is how these things work. But it's a drastic improvement compared to, you know, the one that thought George Washington descended from sub-Saharan Africa. Now, anyway, basically what they did was jack up that context length to 1 million tokens. Now, what exactly does this mean? Well, in the words of ChatGPT, a token context length limit is the maximum number of tokens, aka words, punctuation, spaces, etc., that a language model can consider at one time when generating or understanding text. So this includes both the prompt as well as the response generated by the model. So it can now take up to 1 million basically spaces, words. Think of like characters when you text something, essentially. And that's what it can now take in, and that is more than 5 times larger than the next largest model, which is Claude 2.1. No idea where that comes from, but they're only at a measly 200,000. Now, ChatGPT, the one that, you know, plebs like you and me can use, I believe is up to about 4,086 is what ChatGPT told me. GPT-4 Turbo gets up to 128,000. So there's wide variability in this. It doesn't necessarily impact the quality of the model or the responses that it gives, but it does impact the length of bullshit that you're able to yap about with these LLMs. So you could literally go ahead and upload a book to this thing and basically say, give me a summary. Now already you could say, hey, give me a summary of this old ass book or some shit like that. But you could basically take any piece of information that's under 1 million tokens, I guess, and upload that into this and say, hey, what the fuck is going on here? So definitely a very useful tool, and it shows that Google is actually kind of putting on its big boy pants and starting to figure out what exactly consumers want from their artificial intelligence models. Now, in addition, Google's Gemini also allows users to fine-tune responses. Basically, you get a response from the model, you can go in and select one sentence or even one word and say, change this. Whereas on something like ChatGPT, you just get the full response and you say, that sucked ass, give me another response. Google, you can be a little bit more surgical with it. Not a huge leap in terms of quality, once again, but definitely an improvement, shows that we're thinking a little bit more specifically or a little bit more surgically, once again, in that regard. Now, companies like Apple, Meta, Google, once again, and Amazon, it was all revealed relatively recently that they had struck deals with companies like Shutterstock and something called PhotoBucket that I guess is from the old internet before, you know, members of the Generation Z, like myself, were actually on the internet. So I guess this is that old-ass shit that millennials were doing, so it's probably something super fucking weird. But Either way, they struck deals with these companies to license their data in order to train their AI models, somewhere in the range of about $25 to $50 million for each one of these deals, at least according to Reuters. Then, of course, Elon Musk, this guy cannot stay out of the news. He came out and said that Grok V2, so this is Grok, G-R-O-K, not G-R-O-Q, which is a startup company that's doing some shit with AI. I don't really know what they do. But Elon Musk's Grok V2, they are set to drop the next version of this LLM in about May, and they say it's going to be way fucking better than ChatGPT-4. We'll see if that actually pans out. Musk is a big overpromising guy, and a lot of the time he does overdeliver, but he definitely is no stranger to underdelivering or disappointing as well. Now, of course, Microsoft is opening up a new AI hub in London. Why anybody would ever want to go to London is well beyond me, but still, I guess they're doing that. Spotify announced an AI playlist for users in the UK and Australia. I guess that's one reason to go to London, so that you can get AI playlists from Spotify. And this isn't that bullshitty bot AI that they used to do. This is actual, like, hey, you can type in a prompt and say, make me a playlist based on XYZ, and it'll do it for you. So if you're in Sydney, or if you're sad enough to be in London, let us know how that feature is going as well, so that we can riff on it in the future. Then, of course, the New York Times, they are already suing OpenAI, and in the process, they are coming out and chopping their balls off in the meantime. Basically, they came out and claimed that OpenAI trained ChatGPT on over 1 million hours of YouTube videos. So this isn't a million YouTube videos. This is 1 million hours of YouTube content that they trained on, an absolute shit ton. And that's why OpenAI CEO Mira Murati, I believe her name is, was so kind of put on edge when that reporter in the interview that I linked to in the piece here asked her where Sora trained on. And obviously it was on YouTube. They didn't want to say it at the time. Big takeaway of the day is this shit is absolutely blowing up, and it's starting to make it look like that $15.7 trillion estimate that the International Monetary Fund, or the IMF, gave in terms of estimating artificial intelligence's impact on the economy through 2030 is underestimating the impact, if anything. Now, that's kind of our big takeaway of the day. Obviously, some crazy stuff always going on in AI. Hopefully, it doesn't kill us, you know, hopefully ever. But if it does, I certainly hope it's after I'm already dead. Now, let's go ahead and move on to some of the stock movers of the day. First and foremost, we have BlackBerry, which was, it surprised me as much as it just did to surprise you, because I thought this company had gone bankrupt 7 times already. I figured they'd be gone for good, but they were up 7.8% on the day because AMD is giving them a lifeline and basically inviting them to come and work on their super cool robotics project. I guess this is going to be kind of a robotic software system that they license out to industrial healthcare companies and other nerdy bullshit. So definitely a good sign of a revival for BlackBerry. Moving on to Moderna, speaking of revivals, this is the company that once was considered cool because it saved the world and then was hated because obviously they were putting microchips in all of our DNA and making us magnetic to 5G towers and stuff like that. We all know that's definitely true. But they had some big news yesterday saying that they were coming very far along with their developments for vaccines for things like the flu, for cancer, and combinations of things like the cold and the flu, or COVID and the flu. I don't fucking know anything about this stuff anymore. But either way, in addition to that, they got $750 million in funding from Blackstone, specifically Blackstone Life Sciences Investment Group. So obviously that's a huge vote of confidence from a company like Blackstone. Then, of course, the company did say that they were going very far in these clinical trials for a lot of these drugs that are allegedly set to hit their pipeline pretty soon. So another good sign for Moderna. Moving on down into what's rotten. Apparently weed is rotten here today. Guess nobody likes it anymore, but you know, this is a drug that has never once killed anybody, but it does kill portfolios on the regular. And it did that once again here on Tuesday. Tilray Brands, they came out kickstarting this earnings season that's going to really kickstart at the end of the week with bank earnings. Tilray front ran it a little bit, releasing their numbers, and I'm sure they regretted it immediately. Net losses came in nearly triple what was expected at a loss of 12 cents per share versus the 5 cents per share that was expected. They missed on revenue. They had super weak guidance, basically saying that free cash flow was still going to be negative in 2024, even though they had previously stated that it was going to be positive this year. Now, you would think that they were doing a little bit better given that Germany has now legalized or decriminalized weed. The Biden administration keeps like teasing that they're going to do something, probably just pandering for votes for 2024, because if they were going to do anything, you've had plenty of time to do it already. So, you know, why bring it up right now? I wonder why. And then, you know, before I get too angry, let's go ahead and move on to NVIDIA. Now, NVIDIA was down 2% on the day here. I forgot this stock even had the ability to fall. But I guess when competition heats up, that's what's going to happen. And Intel came out on Tuesday and reminded us that they are not the boomer tech company that everybody thought they were. They came out, they have a new model, or not a new model, a new chip that's called Gaudi? Gaudi? It's basically the car brand Audi, but with the G in front of it. It's how it's spelled. So, you know, Gaudi 3 is basically what they're calling this thing, and they claim that it runs AI models 1.5 times faster than NVIDIA's H100 or Hopper 100 chips. Now, that's a very bold claim. They say that it's now the fastest AI chip on the market. Obviously, that's going to threaten NVIDIA's dominance. NVIDIA right now controls about 80-90% of the global chip market. That is on par with what Standard Oil controlled of the global oil market when Teddy Roosevelt and the U.S. government initially broke them up way back in the day. So NVIDIA is getting into dangerous territory here. We'll see if Ms. Walking L. Lina Khan actually wants to do anything. All right, let's go ahead and get into the last story of the day here. So this is called Opening Closed-End Funds. This is a weird one here because we're describing one specific investment fund, which is not typically something that we do. Usually we like to talk about asset classes, but these guys are kind of creating their own asset class. So we've heard for quite a while that we're going to democratize this and we're going to democratize that. And it's mostly from fucking bullshitters at Robinhood or something, which, by the way, go ahead and check out our Robinhood stock analysis video as well. We've been crushing it with our projections, especially with things like Palantir, with Trump Media, although that one wasn't very difficult to do whatsoever. But go ahead and check out that stuff and let us know what other companies you want to see us cover. But effectively, this company is really trying to democratize investing in private companies. Effectively, you know, there are companies like Equity Zen and like other bullshitty ass products that say, oh, anybody can invest in, you know, privately traded companies here. You still have to be an accredited investor. And to be an accredited investor, at least in 2023, I think it was $1.1 million in personal net worth, or $2.3 million if you were married, or, you know, having an income over $200K single, over $300K married, or really if you had like a CFA license, or if you had a Series 7 or something like that, you are considered an accredited investor at that point. For the plebeians like the rest of us here, we have absolutely no way of investing in pre-IPO companies. And this company, Destiny Tech 100, is looking to change that. So the ticker symbol that we're talking about today is DXYZ, and what the hell is this thing? Basically, this is what's called a closed-end fund. Mutual funds and exchange-traded funds, or ETFs, which you're probably a little bit more familiar with, those are called open-ended funds. Now, the big difference here is the number of shares. So just like a company, when these funds go public, there's a certain amount of shares that they've issued. Now, closed-end funds have a cap on that. They're never going to issue more shares than they go public with, whereas open-ended funds, they basically create and terminate shares on a per-demand basis. Now, the goal of an open-end fund is to maintain the price of that fund at NAV so that it properly reflects the assets in the portfolio, whereas a closed-end fund does not have to do that. And so the big difference here is that closed-end funds, because they don't create or destroy shares, effectively, this is traded totally on market sentiment. So this DXYZ ticker, this is called the Destiny Tech 100, Inc. Not ETF, not fund or anything, because again, we really don't know what this thing is besides a closed-end fund. So effectively, what this thing trades on is the hype around pre-IPO tech companies. More specifically, some of the top holdings within this fund are SpaceX, Axiom Space, Boom Supersonic, Epic Games, OpenAI, Class Dojo, Stripe, Relativity Space, a lot of cool shit. Jesus, I'm just realizing nearly half of the portfolio is purely space companies. That's pretty interesting. About 35% is SpaceX alone, about 10% is Axiom Space, and then it looks like Relativity Space is about 3%. So what does that put us at already? About 48% allocation? That's absolutely insane. I didn't even realize that in writing this. But either way, that is some cool shit to be looking at. So if you buy this company, you are buying into owning these stocks. And so effectively, what the goal is for them to hold the shares until they go public, they get a big fat payout, and then they can either take that money and reinvest it into continuing to invest in pre-IPO funds, or they can do shit like pay out dividends. But this is not going to stick to NAV. It does not track these asset prices. How could it? Private companies, they're not marked to market more than, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 times a year if there's a liquidity event allowed for these employees. That's very rare, so it doesn't track NAV whatsoever. There's no fundamental basis for this closed-end fund. It's pure supply and demand for these kinds of companies. And that's why we saw it fall about 35% on the day yesterday. Now, this thing has been absolutely ripping. It's up. It initially listed at like $8.50 and then first went public at about $25. And then it reached as high as like 80-something bucks, and now it's currently around 60-something. So it's been an absolutely wild ride. This is an incredibly volatile investment, but a really cool opportunity in a closed-end fund setting to invest in these kinds of companies. So definitely go ahead and check that out. See if it's right for your portfolio. Obviously, this is not investment advice. I am a complete moron. I eat crayons. Do not take advice from a website that, you know, our downvotes are literally monkey shits. We give out fucking bananas for likes. Don't take investment advice from us. So call a financial advisor and figure out if this is right for you before you dump your life savings into it. Our question is going forward, how is this thing going to perform long term? What are they going to do with profitable investments? And most of all, for what kind of financial plan does this investment make sense? Now, let us know if you do buy it and how the ride goes, but we'll end it off here today with a quote from the king of technology himself, Mr. Peter Thiel. In his book, Zero to One, which is an asinine read, but a pretty interesting one in itself, he said, "There is no reason why technology should be limited to computers. Properly understood, any new and better way of doing things is technology." That's exactly what I said when I discovered, you know, wiping my ass from back to front instead of front to back. I said, this is a technological innovation right here. So obviously, that's what Peter Thiel is talking about. He would be super proud of me. I should probably get a Thiel scholarship for that one. All right, before I say anything else ridiculous that gets me fired here, hope you guys are having a wonderful week, and it continues to be wonderful. We'll be back with you tomorrow here. Happy investing, happy trading. Bye now.